Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Do you need to seek legal advice, but the thought of the fees makes you hesitate? Well, there are some new developments that are just really baby steps to more affordable legal help. We're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about a lot more issues that affect you. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director of Responsive Law. Tom, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Glad to be here, Shirley.
Now, before we get any farther, let's just tell our listeners, and I've had you on number of times before, tell them what your organization is devoted to doing.
Certainly. Responsive Law works to reform policies so that we can make the legal system more user-friendly and more accessible to everybody.
And by accessible, you mean in many ways more affordable.
Absolutely. More affordable and just easier to navigate as well.
Yeah. Well, that would be a big help, because I think right now people kind of shudder when they think they need to get some legal assistance. But now there's been some things that have taken that I alluded to, that the American Bar Association, I believe, has taken some baby steps towards perhaps loosening its grip on people that are non-lawyers providing legal advice.
That's correct. There's a long history of state bars and the American Bar Association standing in the way of anybody but lawyers providing any sort of legal help, no matter how simple. And they do this by putting in place restrictions about what's called the unauthorized practice of law, or UPL. And you have a few places where states are starting to think about alternatives, where they're licensing non-lawyers to do certain tasks or loosening their own UPL restrictions. And so recently, the ABA considered a resolution that would not necessarily open up the types of people who could practice, but says, here are some guidelines. If your state chooses to allow non-lawyers to provide services, here are the guidelines that they should follow in being regulated so that we can protect consumers.
So you're not just opening this up to anybody who wants to get out there and hang up a shingle and says, I can give you legal advice. There are parameters, there are guidelines, there's going to be qualifications for this that people could do this. So that's kind of what the ABA has done at this point?
Right. In fact, they haven't even set out the types of regulations that would be in place. They've just set out a set of objectives that says, here are the things we want to do. If you are going to regulate some sort of non-lawyer service provider, here are the things you should try to do with those regulations.
And are they going to be moving forward on that? Is this something that's going to be worked on and developed and explored over time?
This is something that actually is finished at the ABA level, at least for now. The ABA always revisits these issues from time to time. But this particular resolution is the final product of an ABA commission that's been working on these issues. And so what happens now is these are a set of guidelines that states are very likely to follow, knowing that the ABA at least says, yes, it's possible you may want to consider having non-lawyer service providers. Here's some ways to go about doing it in a very sort of high-level way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I should tell everyone, you're a lawyer.
That's correct.
My husband's a lawyer. So we're not beating up on lawyers. We're actually trying to expand. You know, would this in some ways be comparable to the nurse practitioner in the medical field?
Absolutely. In many ways, there's a lot of good analogies to the medical profession, and it shows how far behind the legal profession is in expanding the types of services available. So if you have a medical problem, you know, if you have a headache, you don't go right to a brain surgeon. You may take over-the-counter medication. You may go to see a nurse practitioner. You may go to a pharmacist. You may go to a doctor. You absolutely don't go right to a surgeon, though. And mm-hmm. So you have a lot of options. You have a continuum of services that's available to meet the range of needs you might have. In law, though, your options are go to a lawyer or do it yourself.
Right. Now, what about some of these websites? And this is kind of a segue, and if you don't want to answer it, fine. But what about the websites that offer legal assistance? Are they offering mm-hmm. forms and things like that? This is not legal advice. Is that right?
If you go to LegalZoom or Rocket Lawyer or any number of other companies out there that are providing legal products, they're providing you with essentially the equivalent of TurboTax. What TurboTax does for taxes, they're doing for law. So they're not providing you with legal advice, but they are helping you complete the forms that you need to do. And these forms are very complicated. So they're doing a great service by letting you answer a questionnaire, which will then give you a completed will or a completed completed rental agreement or mm-hmm. anything else you might need. But the one thing they're not doing is providing individualized legal advice. The companies do often do that as a separate product, but the,
but that's a fee and that's a lawyer.
Right, that's a fee with a lawyer. Right, so the products you see advertised are generally, you know, pay us money and we'll help you fill out the form to do your will, and we'll guide you through so that you answer questions, okay, and the end product is a will.
Now, do paralegals have to work for a lawyer? They're not able to go out and say, okay, I'm going to provide assistance to you. You don't have to hire a lawyer.
Right.
Because
that's correct. In fact, the term paralegal is used only to refer to technically to someone who's working for a lawyer.
Okay.
Now, in some states, there are people with paralegal type training that are allowed to do some form of other work. So, for instance, in California, you have what's known, and in a few other states, you have what's known as legal document assistants or legal document preparers, who are legally allowed to do very limited work in terms of helping you fill in the blanks on a form. They're really not even allowed to help guide you through the form. They're just allowed to basically do what's considered basically scrivener work, where they're filling in the blanks for you, mm-hmm, and maybe asking you the questionnaire that you could do yourself. So it's a helpful service, but it's not legal advice. One development that started recently in Washington State is the licensure of what they call limited licensed legal technicians. We'll just call them legal technicians for short. And these legal technicians are licensed by the state bar and the state courts to provide limited types of services where they can do some legal advice. They can do more than a paralegal could do. They can work for you independently. They can't do everything a lawyer could do, but they can provide you with some limited amount of guidance that a non-lawyer wouldn't be allowed to do. And so this is limited to family law right now as a trial period, but they're doing it with family law to start. And it's a very small number of people that have been licensed so far to do this.
Okay, so now this is a state licensing procedure.
That's correct.
And do they have to do anything with the Bar Association? They don't have to be a member of the Bar Association or anything?
No, they're not a member of the Bar.
They're independent business providers.
That's correct. They're licensed by the state Supreme Court.
Okay. So this person then would be able to set up an independent office.
Mm-hmm.
It would not have to go through an attorney. I can see why attorneys want to hold on, but, you know, at the same time, there's so many people out there, and we see this at Call for Action, so many people who need assistance but not the help of a lawyer. And I've gone through some things with my brother that I've shared with you where there are forms that I have to fill out for him that I can't do in the state of Florida, and I have to hire a lawyer, and it costs me a lot of money.
Right. And
like it's the same forms every year.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, that's the sort of thing that a non-lawyer would be perfectly competent to do if they've been properly trained.
Well, listen, I do all the work and then they file the papers,
right,
you know. And anyway, it's very, very interesting situation to me. I've run into this before in Florida. They're very protective. So at any rate, well, time's flying by. Let's just let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director of Responsive Law, which is a nonprofit organization that wants to make the legal system more accessible and more affordable. And I'm certainly for those options, Tom. And you and I have talked many times over the years, and I like the things that you're doing. So anyway, going back to this business ability to get help. So right now for a consumer, unless you live in California or in some Washington state, you said, has limited access to this type of legal assistance?
Right.
Okay. Those are the only two places that you're going to be able to go out and get somebody without going through a lawyer's office.
Right. There's a few other states that have the even more limited version that California has, but Washington state is the only place where you can get any sort of real legal advice of any sort from a non-lawyer.
Non-lawyer. But these are licensed people. Right. Just want to know. Now, so consumers should watch out for somebody claiming they can offer you legal assistance in these other states, and they're not licensed, and that's a no-no. We know that there are crooks out there that do things like this. So this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about people that go through the system that are trained. What is the level of training that these people have to have, Tom? Or do you know?
Yes. In Washington State, they have to have basically, it's I believe the equivalent of about a semester and a half of classroom training, as well as a requirement of experience, and they pass an exam, which is a really high bar. I mean, there are folks out there who have been paralegals for years, who know these areas already. And so because it's such a high bar, you've only got about a dozen people who have been licensed so far in the year since this is launched.
Mm-hmm.
There are discussions right now. There's a proposal that just came out a few days ago to lower the bar for the amount of training and education you would need for this, but it's still a very high bar, which means it's very tough for consumers to find these people. There are just not a lot of people who want to take on all that additional educational debt to provide this added level of service.
Sure, I understand. And then they have to go out and advertise and find the clients.
Right.
As well.
And clients aren't aware that these people are out there
and
yet
these
either.
Since this is a new field, I think people, when they learn about if there were these services were offered, I think people would flock to them, but yet you got to get the word out there. Well, do you see positive? I mean, these are baby steps. I think they're positive. I mean, do you see anything happening in the near term?
I'm hoping that other states have started to look at this idea. No one's put a proposal forth yet, but other states have started to look at the idea of licensing non-lawyers to do certain types of legal tasks.
What's going on in our area?
Well, in our area, there's a proposal, right, or there's a comment period right now. The DC Committee on Unauthorized Practice of Law has asked for suggestions, essentially, on what they can do to change their unauthorized practice of law rules. And so Responsive Law submitted comments to them saying that really what you need is a very global change that says if someone is providing services and there's no complaint from a consumer, or if there's no money that's been lost as a result of this person's services, there should be no sort of liability for unauthorized practice of law. It's a simple matter of these being essentially allegedly consumer protection laws, then if there's no consumer harm, there shouldn't be any problem as far as the committee is concerned.
Mm-hmm. So this would be something new for the district. And I noticed that one of the proposals that these non-lawyers be allowed to provide information to low-income families.
Right. One of the things we proposed, which I think is a really interesting model, I've got to say, is that nonprofit organizations should be allowed to use either lawyers or non-lawyers to provide help to their constituency. So if you're a housing nonprofit, you could have lawyers provide help. You can do that now. But you could also have very competent non-lawyers who know all about how landlord-tenant court operates, know all about tenants' rights, know all sorts of things, far more than most lawyers know. Those people should be allowed to provide legal advice about these issues to the people that this nonprofit is intended to help.
Sure. I can understand that. I know that at Call for Action, we get a lot of people who have issues. And we have to be very careful that we don't provide them legal advice, but we can provide them practical advice on things. And that, you know, you have to tread a fine line there.
Right. And for someone like Call for Action, if there were, you know, which deals with consumer issues, they would be able to say, look, we have expertise in consumer disputes. We know what you need to do to file a demand, to write a demand letter. We know all sorts of things about your situation, and it's a nonprofit, so there's no reason to expect that they would be trying to rip anybody off.
We're not, right.
You don't need the same sort of oversight that a for-profit entity would need.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the other issues that face consumers aside from the generally high cost of getting legal advice and the lack of non-legal, non-lawyer help for consumers. You know, most of us don't have lawyers on retainer. I mean, you know, no matter what you see on TV, we don't have lawyers on retainer. And we probably, a lot of us don't know lawyers, except maybe you have a lawyer that does your will and that sort of thing. Let's suppose you're faced with a situation where you really need a lawyer. How do you go about finding one, Tom? This is kind of a daunting task. Is there a way to check out a lawyer?
There are. There are a few things you can do. There's a very, well, not very well known, because obviously a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, don't know about it, but there's a website, avo.com, that's AVVO.com. They are they do lawyer ratings. They do a combination of looking at a lawyer's record in terms of any disciplinary action that's been taken against them and consumer feedback. And it's a very good place to go to find out what lawyers are in your area and what lawyers work on the issues that you may need help with.
Okay. This is not a site that's going to be paid by a lawyer to get their name up there.
No, this is something where the ratings are independent of any lawyer feedback. In fact, lawyers have sometimes complained about AVO's ratings because they don't like what's been said, and AVO will review those to make sure they're being fair. But AVO is not getting their money from the people who they are rating. It's not a pay for ratings type
of
situation.
Okay, it's AVVO.com.
That's correct.
Do you know, I just learned something today. I may have known about them, but I had forgotten if I ever knew. So, and they don't charge you for this?
No, they don't charge for reviewing the ratings. They do have other things they charge you for where they can put you together with a lawyer. They have a service where if you want to get 15 minutes of advice from a lawyer, mm-hmm. you can pay, I believe it's $39, and get a 15-minute phone call from a lawyer in the area you need help with.
Well, the bar associations used to offer that. Do they still mm-hmm. or do they not?
The bar associations do still offer referral services. This is a little different because... first of all, it's not as restrictive as the Bar Association ones are.
Okay.
And also, it's a lot more, it's frankly a lot more user-friendly. It's most people
consumer
expect
consumer friendly. I'm into consumer-friendly.
Mm-hmm. Right. More consumer-friendly.
Yeah.
Most consumers expect to go on the web and be able to click some buttons to find what they need. The bar services generally are, if they have a web presence, are a little bit clunky, and many of them are just a phone call hotline. So this is a much more consumer-friendly way to do it.
Great. I'm going to check it out. AVVO.com, folks, if you want information on lawyers, check them out, see if they're complaints, see what consumers say about them.
Right.
I mean, you always have to read consumer reviews with a grain of salt because some of them will be good, some of them will be bad. A lot of people who are angry express that anger. So keep that in mind. But anyway, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director of Responsive Law. We're talking about some of the ways to make the legal system more accessible and affordable to consumers. So with checking out a lawyer, go to AVVO.com. All right. What if I want to complain about a lawyer? Is that a place to do it?
You can certainly make a review of a lawyer there. It's a very good place to get that feedback heard by the public. And in many ways, that's the best recourse you have when you have a problem with a lawyer. Sadly, our system's not set up very well to complain against a lawyer. If you have a lawyer complaint, you can take it to the bar. The bar is very reluctant in many cases to find anything, find against a lawyer and to give them any sort of real punishment. And it's a very small percentage of consumer complaints against lawyers that actually have any real disciplinary action taken by the bar.
Okay. Now, I always feel like, if you're going to have a builder, you have a contract. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have almost anything done, you have a contract. You buy a car, you have a contract. Shouldn't consumers have the terms of agreement with a lawyer spelled out in writing?
Absolutely. In fact, if you asked your lawyer about any of those other situations, the first thing they would tell you is
get
it in writing. So you should absolutely do that with a lawyer. If a lawyer refuses to do that, find another lawyer.
Yeah, I would agree. Right. And are they going to charge you for writing it and give it to you?
They should not charge you for writing up what your fees are going to be. No, that should be something that you do. Or, you could write it up for them too. You could say to them, look, if you tell me what your fees are going to be, I'll write it up if that'll make you happier.
Right.
But you should absolutely get it in writing.
But signed by both the consumer and the lawyer.
Right, absolutely.
Right.
And just having it in writing from the lawyer, even if it's not signed off on by you, if the lawyer presents you with a piece of paper that says, here are my fees for various parts of the representation, that's good. And it protects the lawyer, too, because it spells out the lawyer's responsibilities.
Well, then consumers can be unreasonable. We know that.
Right.
So you're protected on both sides
from
it, from the consumer and the lawyer. So, okay. So get a contract. Now, there's one thing that you and I have talked about in the past that and you touched on nonprofits being able to offer consumer help to consumers. But what about corporations? They're not allowed to. I mean, a big corporation that's not a law firm can't hire lawyers to provide advice to you, right? To their
clients. That's right. So, you couldn't have Target or Costco or some other major company say, we provide a lot of services as part of our business. We'd like to expand that to providing lawyers to people. They can't do that. You have to be a lawyer to own a law firm.
Even though it would be a lawyer who's a member of the bar, mm-hmm. I mean, they're duly licensed and that sort of thing, they still could not provide something like a Minute Clinic.
Exactly. I can go to the Minute Clinic at Walgreens and see a doctor, mm-hmm. see someone who's professionally licensed, and they can review my medical situation, and they charge a reasonable rate. And it's very easy. It's very consumer friendly. And the same thing Walgreens can't open up a Minute Clinic for law issues. It would be great if they could, because you could have that same sort of service where you go in, you have a schedule of fees. They say, look, if you want to just have a 15-minute consultation, it costs you this much. If you want us to write a will, it costs you this much. It would be very easy. It would be very consumer friendly. It would be a great place for lawyers, too, to work, because they would be able to just focus on practicing law instead of drumming up business. But they're not allowed to do that because only lawyers can have an ownership interest in a law firm.
Why is that? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
No, it doesn't make a lot of sense. The reason the bar gives for this this restriction, it's a really old restriction. And the reason is they claim is that if an outside party owns a law firm, they're going to exert influence over the lawyers and they're using their professional judgment. There's big problems with that reasoning. First of all, look at the medical example.
Well, if a law firm buys, same thing, if they have a huge corporation as a client, is that going to affect their judgment?
Right. Well, there's that aspect. But also look at the Minute Clinic. Doctors aren't all of a sudden not diagnosing problems because they're in the Minute Clinic.
Right.
They have ethical obligations as doctors.
Exactly.
Lawyers have ethical obligations as lawyers, and those don't get superseded by the fact that they're working for somebody. In fact, you know, lawyers would get disbarred if they – or should be disbarred if they're violating those ethical obligations, regardless of who they're working for.
Yeah. I mean, I don't quite get that.
Right. And other countries don't have this ban on outside ownership. You look at Australia, you look at the UK, they allow outside ownership and
it
works fine. They have rules in place just to be extra careful where they say, look, this is for instance, in Australia, if you have a law firm owned by non-lawyers, there is a lawyer called the legal practitioner director, who's the sort of main point of contact for all ethical concerns. And they bear ultimate responsibility for ethical conduct of all the lawyers there.
Does this basically come from the ABA, the American Bar Association?
It comes from the ABA and state bars. The ABA has pushed hard against this, though. There have been commissions that the ABA has convened over the past decade or more that have tried to look into this issue, and the ABA as a whole has said to them, no, don't even bother because we're not going to vote in favor of it. We're not going to change. Don't even look at this issue.
Right.
In fact, in the resolution I mentioned about non-lawyer practice, that was a big issue. A lot of the people who voted against were concerned that this would somehow open the door to non-lawyer ownership, which wasn't even covered in the resolution, but it's such a scary thing to a lot of lawyers without any real reason.
Well, they don't want to lose their livelihood. They spend a lot of time and money to get through law school. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it seems to me like they would be getting clients that they currently don't have.
Absolutely. For folks who are already in law practices that are successful, they've got their client base. If you're working for a large law firm, that's not going to be affected by outside ownership in any big way. If you're a smaller lawyer who's dealing with consumer issues, this can actually be a welcome development for you because it gives you
absolutely.
a great opportunity for employment, gives you a place to worry about just practicing law. You didn't go to law school just to worry about marketing and finding clients. You went to law school because you wanted to help people with their legal problems.
Right.
You get to do that full time, 40 hours or more a week if you're working for a corporation that's providing legal services.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. And doing it in the field that you want to be in.
Absolutely.
Rather than what the corporation says, you know, the law firm says you need to do this. Well, I think these are steps forward, baby steps in some cases. We only have about half a minute here. Any changes in small claims courts raising their limits, which they so desperately need to do?
There hasn't been a lot of motion on that. There's always a few things here and there, but no one's really supersized their small claims court to let, you know, cases of $20,000 or $25,000 get into there.
Which is really oftentimes a level of complaints in today's economy. I mean, a $5,000 complaint is nothing in many cases. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, you know what? We can always fight the good fight, Tom, and you're out there doing that. The organization is Responsive Law. The website is responsivelaw.org. They've got a ton of good information there. And they're not trying to harm lawyers. They're just trying to benefit consumers and make it a little bit easier for us to get information and help. Tom, thank you so much. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM Federal News Radio. My guest has been Tom Gordon, Executive Director of Responsive Law. Again, the website is responsivelaw.org. And you can check them out. And if you want to contact me, my email is shirley@callforaction.org. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.